to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, ElectricDragon505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything for you. Welcome to the Animation Podcast. You got the idea? Okay, good. See, it's that simple. But specifically, though, it is about the latest news that happened this week. So, first things first, I am going to be talking about the biggest night in animation, of course, the Annie Awards, about the show itself, and of course, about the big winners. And then afterwards, I will be looking into the first trailer of the LEGO Ninjago movie. Then afterwards, once again going into LEGOs, I will be looking into the new director of the LEGO Movie 2. Then afterwards, we will be looking into another trailer. This time, it's going to be for the revival of Samurai Jack. And finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. And you can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, first things first, let us dive into the biggest night of animation. It was definitely a night of fun, a night of joy, a night of unity with all the animation community, with a little hint of a few smacks at the Muslim ban. I am talking, of course, about the Annie Awards, the biggest night for animation in which we celebrate all things animation, rather it be just movies or TV shows or specials, anything that is animated, it is time that they finally earn their rewards. And on top of that, it is actually the very rare award show this year that actually does not give a crap about La La Land. So, of course, a lot of fun has happened at the Annie Awards, but I'm sure that first and foremost, you guys really want to know about who won? Who were the big winners at the Annie Awards? And of course, the big one is hands down Zootopia. Zootopia actually managed to earn a total of 6 Annie Awards, including Best Storyboarding, Best Character Design, Best Voice Acting for Jason Bateman's role as Nick Wilde, Best Writing for Jared Bush and Phil Johnson, Best Directors for Byron Howard and Rich Moore, and of course for Best Animated Feature. And I couldn't be more happy for Zootopia. But the thing is, though, is that Zootopia wasn't the big winner this year. Like, it's not the only movie that actually grabbed a few Annies. At the same time, Kubo and the Two Strings actually managed to pull off a few. Since it did get nominated for 10 Annie Awards, it actually did manage to get away with 3, despite being in massive competition with Zootopia. Kubo and the Two Strings actually managed to get away for Best Editing, Best Production Design, and also for Best Animation. And then you have Moana. Now, it didn't really get as much as Zootopia or Kubo and the Two Strings, but it actually did get away with a couple of Annie Awards, including for Best Animated Effects, and surprisingly enough, for the Best Voice Acting category, it actually was tied. It's not just Jason Bateman that won an Annie Award, but also Moana got an Annie Award for Best Voice Acting for Auli Cravalho's performance as Moana. And on top of that, there are a few other movies that did get a win as well, including The Little Prince for Best Music, The Red Turtle for Best Independent Animated Feature, Doctor Strange for Best Effects in a Live-Action Film, and also The Jungle Book for Best Character Animation in a Live-Action Film. Now, those are just the movies, though. In terms of the TV shows, there are 2 big winners that actually got away with 3 Annie Awards each, while a lot of the others is like a huge variety. First and foremost is the highly acclaimed Guillermo del Toro Netflix series Troll Hunters that actually got 3 Annie Awards for Best Storyboarding, Best Character Design, and Best Character Animation. But then you also got another one, which is not technically a TV show or anything like that. In fact, it is at the Oscars right now, nominated for Best Animated Short. It's actually Pearl, which actually got 3 Annie Awards in the television/broadcast production. It actually got it got a win for Best Music, Best Production Design, and also Best Directing for Patrick Osborne. Which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, Patrick Osborne is actually a familiar name in animation, considering that he recently won an Oscar for the animated short Feast, which played before Big Hero 6. But on top of that, there are also other winners at the same time, with Bob's Burgers actually getting two big wins, one of which being, hold on a sec, I'm reading through my source on Cartoon Brew about the list of winners. We got Best General Audience Animated Television/Broadcast Production, which Bob Burgers got it for the episode Glued, Where's My Bob? And then it also won for Best Writing for a TV/broadcast production for the episode The Hormoniums. While the other TV shows that actually did get away with something, there is Adventure Time that won for Best Television/broadcast production for children for the episode Bad Jubies. There is also the Mr. Peabody and Sherman Show that actually got Best Voice Acting for, hold on a sec, I'm trying to find, where is it? Ah, here it is, okay. So, it's actually, for the episode of Ponce de Leon, it was actually Carlos Alazaraqui, sorry about that, who actually won the Annie for Best Voice Acting for his role as Ponce de Leon. Then afterwards, you also got Tumbleleaf that actually won for Best Television/Broadcast Production for Preschool Children. And finally, you also got Disney Mickey Mouse, which actually won for Best Editing. But on top of that, it's not just that. It's not just those winners, like not just the animated projects, but there are also some people that did receive some Annies as well. And I'm talking, of course, about the Juried Awards. Now, in the Winsor McKay Award, which is kind of like the Lifetime Achievement Award in animation, they are given to Disney animator Dale Baer, to National Film Board of Canada's Caroline Leaf, and also the director of Ghost in the Shell, Mamoru Oshii. While in the Up iWorks Award for the Technical Achievement, it has actually been given to Google Spotlight's Virtual Reality Program. And then you also got June Foray Award for their significant and benevolent of charitable impact on the art and industry of animation, given by the directors of Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, Bill and Sue Croyer. And finally, the Special Achievement Award has been given to the documentary Life Animated. And on top of that, the show itself, my God, let me just start off with that one. Like, the show, it was definitely a blast to watch. Now, in the previous years recently, like, I wasn't able to go and check out the Annie Awards because during that time I would be on vacation. But luckily this year I finally managed to catch up with the Annie Awards, and like I said before, it was just an absolute blast to watch. It was definitely a lot of fun. Like the presenters are absolutely a blast, and I definitely enjoyed a lot of them. Like they would always come in twos, by the way, where you get like a lot of great comedic duos in there. These would include Ali Cravallo and also the voice of Belle, Paige O'Hara, coming in. They were the last presenters, and then there was also John Musker and Ron Clements. Those guys are an absolute blast to watch. You also have Glenn Keane and Kobe Bryan, who came in. They are absolutely enjoyable together. Like, that was a lot of fun. There are a lot of others as well, but those are just the ones that I can think on top of my head that are definitely fun to watch. But yeah, like, each presenter, like, they really brought out their own comedic spin onto the presentation. It was just definitely a lot of fun, and like you could definitely feel the air that they were just hanging out with a bunch of friends, and just like they were mostly there not just for the award show but also to have a good time. And by the way, like, this is something that's very interesting to note regarding the Annie Awards. For those of you who don't watch it, This is actually a very rare award show in which recently they decided to not have any host. Like, beforehand, like, there is the usual, like, host for the ceremonies and the, all that stuff, but recently they decided to drop it. It's not really that great of an idea to always have a host, so they decided, you know what, we're just gonna keep it to just the presenters to have their time to shine in the award show. And you know what, it really does work. Like, you don't necessarily need a host in order to present a great award show, you know? Like, I know there are some examples that could prove me wrong, like with the Tony Awards, which are always amazing to go and watch. But then again, you also have, like, the Oscars or even the Golden Globes that can prove my theory right onto that sometimes having a host is not always a good idea. But no, the Annie Awards managed to pull it off very well. And I mean, like, even when watching it, like, just looking at it, I feel so happy to be, like, I wouldn't say a part, but just, you know, I just feel happy that I feel like my passion, my love for animation is, like, really strong, and just watching an environment that just celebrates animation is just absolutely beautiful. Like, it really did made my night, and I definitely do feel that the people at Asifa Hollywood did a great job with this year's presentation. It definitely was a blast. Oh, and by the way, I just want to make a quick mention right now to mention a late happy birthday to the president of Asifa Hollywood, Jerry Beck. So you guys can, if you guys are listening to this, you can go and give a shout out of a late happy birthday to Jerry as well. Just a quick little mention that I want to say. Oh, also, I just realized another great example of great presenters at the Annies is actually Tom Kenny and also James Hong. That was definitely a lot of fun to check out as well. Okay, so with that said, though, is there anything else? I don't think so, no. Not in terms of the shows. Okay, but anyways, going back into my thoughts on the winners. Like I said before, I am definitely happy that Zootopia was the big winner. It definitely deserved all the Annies that it has received. Some of them are a bit surprising, but you know, I'm definitely glad that it definitely earned the wins for writing and directing and, like, just best animated feature altogether. But at the same time, I'm glad that Zootopia won big this year, but I'm also really glad for Zootopia that it didn't win too big. Like, it didn't completely dominate the Annie Awards and it took everything. It's not like with Inside Out last year or like with La La Land this year. Like, it won a lot, but it didn't win too much to overshadow every other animated film. Like, Kubo and the Two Strings actually managed to get away with a few, and even Moana managed to get away with a few. Like, the one thing that I was surprised but really happy about is the fact that Auli Cravalho won for Best Voice Acting. That was the one thing that I was totally rooting for, and I'm glad that it actually happened, but it was really surprising at the same time where we actually did get a tie for Cravalho's performance, and also with Jason Bateman as Nick Wilde in Zootopia, which he did a great job, by the way. Like, Bateman's performance as Nick is just definitely fantastic, and it definitely is worth it. But no, definitely I'm glad that it didn't overshadow it. But on top of that, also giving it to other movies as well, not just Kubo, not just Moana, but there's also The Little Prince, that actually did walk away with one win for Best Music. Honestly, I was surprised about it, but, you know, the soft little music that keeps on playing in The Little Prince, I guess I kind of forgot about it. In fact, well, I'll be honest, with The Little Prince, I kind of forgot a lot about it, but yeah, I guess, you know what, I'm not complaining about it. You know, it is pretty interesting. But then you also got The Red Turtle, which actually did win for Best Independent Animated Feature. Oh my god. I have seen The Red Turtle. I absolutely love it. It's one of those movies that's just The more simple that the movie is itself, the better that it is. It's very interesting how it is actually made by Studio Ghibli, because it does have a bit of that Studio Ghibli air into it that's just showing like a slice of life movie. It's a little bit in the similar veins of like Totoro or Kiki's Delivery Service or even The Wind Rises. It's kind of like those movies, but the whole theme is that there is a guy who is stranded on a deserted island, and somehow there's this red turtle that came in and became a woman, and thus that's his life right there. But yeah, definitely moving, definitely powerful. I really enjoyed that film. Like, if ever it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, if you're listening to this, go and get it. It is definitely worth watching. It is absolutely beautiful. Now, in terms of the TV productions, I would have to say right now that the biggest surprise for me would have to be the fact that Pearl actually won so much in the TV categories and stuff like that. I can imagine eventually in the future, like maybe later in the 2020 decade, Asifa will probably have no choice, but they got to go and create a brand new category made specifically for virtual reality programs. Because the big thing in the Annie Awards is that the UB iWorks Award went into Google Spotlight's virtual reality program, in which they pretty much went and created, just want to know what's the name specifically, they created Google Spotlight Stories. And I'm not going to deny Pearl is, Pearl definitely deserved to get the Annie Awards that it got. But it is kind of weird that it would win in the categories of the TV broadcast production. So, I don't know. Like, eventually, it might be something that Asifa will eventually bring up, that they gotta eventually separate TV broadcasting with virtual reality and give it their domain. If it's gonna be going at this rate, that we will see more and more and more animated projects that are going to be made for virtual reality, or even if virtual reality is going to be a lot bigger than now, that people are going to be, you know, like if virtual reality is going to be a lot more mainstream, like not just for video games that are going to be costing people around the 4-digit mark, but like soon it's going to be like a commonplace item to go into virtual reality, but who knows. But honestly, I'm really glad that Troll Hunters actually did manage to win a lot, especially with best character animation and best character design. I am currently watching the show right now. It is definitely awesome. Can't wait to see more of what Guillermo del Toro and the crew at DreamWorks Television has in store. But yeah, definitely deserves the Annie wins, especially in the animation, because my God, I just gotta say that the animation that's done in there, it's even better than some of the movies that I've seen, actually. Like, it is, like, just tiptoeing its way to be, like, feature quality. Like, you put that on the big screen, and it wouldn't actually be that bad. It would actually be acceptable, you know? But, yeah, you know, it's definitely great with all the wins that they got right there. And also, at the same time, I just want to have a quick mention right now regarding, what was it again? Oh, yeah, Life Animated winning the Special Achievement Award. I've probably talked about this before, but it definitely brought me a big smile seeing that the Life Animated actually getting so much recognition, not just at the Annies, but even getting an Oscar nomination for Best Documentary, but immediately getting the Special Achievement Award. It was definitely fantastic seeing Roger Ross Williams getting up into the podium, accepting the Annie Award. It was definitely a true sight to behold, and was definitely happy. And on top of bringing in Owen Suskind as well, he was actually there during the presentation too. So, yeah, I'm just definitely glad that Life Animated brought up the, it actually got the recognition that it deserved. And I guess with all that said, I would have to say that That's pretty much the Annie Awards of this year. I definitely had a great time watching it through live stream. Maybe one day there will be a time when I can actually go and see it live. But I just want to say right now, congratulations to all the winners and to all who got nominated at the Annie Awards this year. And we will see what's going to be happening next year at the Annie Awards, when things will start to be brewing, when things can probably get interesting, who knows? But definitely a great job, Asifa. Just keep up the great work bringing in something like this every year. Just, you know, I definitely had a blast celebrating animation. Okay, so for the next stories that I have for you guys, this is going to be a little bit of a tie-in. Not necessarily like a sponsored thing, but it's really more coincidental. As you guys may know, during the weekend that I posted this podcast, it is the release of the Lego Batman movie. So a little bit of an appetizer for fans before they can finally go and get another big taste of the Lego movie. So that's just one of them. However, this year, we are actually going to be getting two Lego movies, not just the Lego Batman movie, but at the same time, we are also getting the Lego Ninjago movie. And that one won't be coming out until the end of September. So, with that said, though, Warner Brothers has finally released the first trailer of the Lego Ninjago movie, giving us a good idea of what it could be. And I think the best way to describe the Lego Ninjago movie right now, it's not that it's trying to really get into the myth and the lore of Ninjago itself, even though, like, personally, I don't really know anything about Ninjago, so maybe it does follow a little bit, but it's not really going into the Ninjago that people probably like know about, like just through the products, like through the Legos. And also, I think, isn't there a TV show of Lego Ninjago? Maybe, I don't know. But anyways, the thing is, what they want to do with the Lego Ninjago movie, it's a little bit similar to what they want to do with the Lego Batman movie, where with the Lego Batman movie, it's basically a bit of a parody movie as well. Like, it's also meant to make fun of the superhero movies that we've been getting this year, especially with the DC films. So it's kind of like a mixture of an homage and a parody at the same time. But it's also a little bit of a spinoff, which stars Will Arnett's Batman from the Lego movie. But with the Lego Ninjago movie, however, this one is more of an homage slash parody of those giant monster movies, or like many, it's a lot of those like Japanese giant monster, giant robot movies, or to put it more simply, it's a little bit similar to like what we recently got with Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim. It's more on that level. And I can definitely tell that this is one of those movies that it's going to be focusing a lot more on the visuals, trying to create all the Lego giant robots that they've crafted. But also at the same time, like, they really want to try to hit hard on the comedy. And I don't know if it's just me, but just watching it, I honestly don't know how to feel about the about the comedy in this, because the big element of comedy that they really want to try to sell is that there's this one character, Lloyd, who is the son of the big villain of the Lego Ninjago movie. So they try to play around that. And even like the last gag in this movie, or one of the last gags of this movie, is that like you see Lloyd in bed and then suddenly like he got a phone call from his dad, and like, he's just there going, it's like, oh, sorry, I think I butt-dialed you. I don't care about you. You know, trying to go with that kind of relationship. So I could definitely imagine that maybe the Lego Ninjago movie will have a bit of a message about, you know, parenthood, about always being there for your kid and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, technically, you could argue that they've already done that in the original Lego movie, but I don't know. It's a bit of a hard sell, and technically, it is the first time that I am seeing anything that would come out of the Lego Ninjago movie. So, if anything, I probably need a little bit more trailers to understand a bit about like what it wants to deliver and stuff like that. It's just honestly with this one, I'm not 100% sure. And especially how the like we just got the Lego Batman movie. Like, it's going to be unavoidable at this point that people are going to go and make comparisons with it, especially the fact that it's going to be released within the same year. So, of course, people are just going to go like, oh, well, I like this thing for the Lego Batman movie better, but I do like this thing for the Lego Ninjago movie better. Like, the comparisons, it's going to happen no matter what. So, I don't know. Like, with this one, like, I'm not going to deny visually, it definitely looks like it's going to be awesome. But in terms of the comedy, it might need to do a little bit more. I mean, like you can even argue that technically we might have gotten a bit of a taste of what the Lego Ninjago could be, considering last year with the movie Storks, we did get this trailer, not a trailer, but we got an animated short, which is like the master, which is like Jackie Chan's character fighting against a chicken. Which pretty much tries to emphasize the action that we could be getting here along with the comedy. So I don't know, like with the Lego Ninjago movie trailer that we got with this, I honestly don't know how to feel. Like, I don't know, like I'm not gonna, I don't think we're gonna get a bad movie with this one, but I think we might need a little bit more trailers to see, like, or at the very least, like, I need to see more trailers in order to sell me more on the comedy, on what it's trying to sell, or even on the story. Because honestly, just watching this, I'm not 100% sure on how to feel. But if you guys are excited to go and see the Lego Ninjago movie, then you'll just have to wait until September 22nd of this year for the second Lego movie spinoff to come out. Now, for our next story, once again, we are going into the Lego movie, but this time we are looking into the big one, which is the Lego Movie 2. Now, so far, like I said before, we're just getting a bit of our appetizers, like with the Lego Batman movie, and then later we're going to get the Lego Ninjago movie, until eventually in 2019, we're going to go and get the long-awaited Lego Movie 2. Or, I mean, it's been just 3 years at this point, so, like, just semi-long-awaited. It hasn't been that long, but the story that we got right here is that apparently the Lego Movie 2 actually has a brand new director, and this is going to be the third one that's attached to this project. Now, first and foremost, originally it was supposed to be the animation co-director of the Lego Movie, Chris McKay, that was supposed to go and make his directorial debut in this. But what happened afterwards was that he wanted to go and direct the Lego Batman movie. So that's pretty much what we ended up with right now. That's Chris McKay's project right there. And then they decided to go and get Rob Schrab to be the director, where he actually did work on a few TV shows beforehand, like with Community and Children's Hospital. But it seems that now he is going to be replaced again. It's not going to be Rob Schrab anymore, but now it is going to be Mike Mitchell. Now, for those of you who don't know who Mike Mitchell is, he has actually directed a few animated features, and he has worked on a lot of sequels that he did not create himself. He has worked on films including the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, Shrek Forever After, Alvin and the Chipmunks Shipwrecked, and a few others at the same time. And he has worked on some original movies as well. He was the director of Sky High, and most recently, he is the director of Trolls, which, considering that that movie as well is a movie based on toys, I wouldn't be surprised if his job on Trolls is what ended up getting him the job to be the director of the Lego Movie 2. Now, going back a little bit more onto who's going to be working in the movie as well. Just a little heads up that Phil Lord and Chris Miller, even though they're not going to be the directors, they will be the producers of the movie, along with just writing the first draft of the script. The real writer is going to be Raphael Bob Waskberg, who is also known to be the creator of BoJack Horseman. Okay, so going into this decision of bringing in Mike Mitchell, honestly, it has me a little bit worried, because the one thing that I am afraid of for him is that he might end up not delivering the sequel that people would want with the Lego Movie. And the reason why I say that is because when you think about the Lego Movie 2, it is hands down one of the most anticipated animated sequels that has yet to come out. Like, people are anticipating the Lego Movie 2 as much as they are anticipating The Incredibles 2 and also How to Train Your Dragon 3. So this is definitely something that people are building themselves up for, something that could be absolutely phenomenal. I mean, considering the amount of people who say that the Lego Movie is one of, like, right now people are saying, oh my god, Lego Movie is one of the best animated films ever. Like, they're gonna have massively high expectations for the sequel. And considering Mike Mitchell's credentials on movies like Shrek Forever After and Trolls and stuff like that, I'm afraid if that guy might not deliver what the people would want. I'm not saying that he's going to do a bad job and the Lego Movie 2 might end up sucking. It's just that he's not going to meet with people's extremely high expectations. Like, that could be the worst case scenario that I can imagine. Now, of course, there could also be a chance that he could make it into, like, he can go and create something big out of it. But I can imagine that, like, the worst case that could happen with the Lego Movie 2, it could end up something that could ultimately just destroy the Lego Movie franchise. Just not necessarily make it a box office bomb, but more, like, destroy its reputation in pop culture. The kind of sequel that people are, like, people might hate it or they're just not going to care for it. Down to the point that when they go back to the first movie, they'll watch it and they'll realize, like, you know what, maybe this is not as good as I thought. And it could ultimately end up just being in the $5 bin at Walmart. Like, that could be its ultimate fate right there. Like you never know, because it could end up following the same footsteps as movies like Shrek, where it would have its 15 minutes of fame, and then afterwards, like, one bad sequel later, its entire reputation is ruined. Like, nobody would want to talk about Shrek anymore, or nobody would want to talk about the Lego Movie. But again, that is just the worst case scenario. Like, overall, I don't think Mike Mitchell is gonna go and create a bad product with the Lego Movie 2, but I am worried that, like, people are not gonna be happy with what could come out of it. And worst case scenario, it might actually come out as a good movie, but people are still going to bash it nonetheless because it didn't meet up to their expectations. You know, it might end up getting, like, the same treatment as Brave because it's not as good as the other Pixar films, you know? That's the worst case that I can imagine. But with all that said, though, I just want to wish, I'm just going to go and wish Mike Mitchell the best of luck with the Lego Movie 2 to go and create something that fans can absolutely enjoy. And if you guys are excited to go and see the Lego Movie 2, then all you have to do is hold on to your expectations until the beginning of 2019. Now, for our next story, we are going to be looking into another trailer. But unlike last time, this one has me absolutely sold. The Lego Ninjago Movie, I'm not 100% sure about how to feel about it, but just after watching this trailer, my god, I am so excited for it. I am ready to go see what's up. And I'm, of course, talking about the new trailer for the grand finale for Samurai Jack, the fifth season. And my God, I cannot wait for it. And it does actually give us a bit about what the plot is, like a little bit of the narrative of what season 5 of Samurai Jack could in store. Basically, the whole thing is that apparently time does not affect Jack. And we are seeing like 50 years later, and the world is basically corrupted by the gang of Aku. So Jack decided, okay, you know what? Screw it. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go and set my goal to get back in time and try to defeat Aku while go fighting against many enemies. And we do have a little bit of a taste of what enemies we have, which we actually got a bunch of girls like pretty much trained to go and kill off Jack, which they're probably minions of Aku, of course. And afterwards, we're also seeing just Jack preparing himself for the fight and like just so many action scenes with swords and guns and so much more. It's just like this trailer, it's half as long as the Lego Ninjago movie, but it completely sold to me on the idea of what this entire season of Samurai Jack is going to be. Like, I seriously cannot wait. The only thing that sucks about it is that apparently there's only going to be like 10 episodes in season 5 from what I've heard. You know, like, honestly, like, just 10 episodes of this is like, really, man? Like, give me more, man. And honestly, I think the one thing that I am really happy about, like, what I'm so glad to see, is that final frickin' Lee, after all this time, I'm finally seeing the Genndy Tartakovsky that I've been waiting for so frickin' long. Like, after all these years that he's just been slaving away at Sony Pictures Animation and under the regime of Adam Sandler making nothing but Hotel Transylvania crap, finally, this is the Genndy Tartakovsky that I have been waiting for. The Genndy Tartakovsky, who is the master back in his master domain onto television animation, and back to possibly his most acclaimed work, Samurai Jack. Like, final freaking Lee. Like, I can finally have respect for the guy again. Like, oh my God, this is the Genndy Tartakovsky that I grew up and that I fell in love with. This is exactly what I've been waiting for. Oh my God. And this trailer, like, even the art style, admittedly, like, yeah, it is more like in the simple route, but it does have a bit of its artistry at the same time. Like, it is this is television animation after all, but this is the kind where it does play with its simplicity very well. And, oh my God. But of course, we also got a lot of the action. That is, you could definitely tell just by this trailer alone, it's going to deliver on the action. But I'm also excited to see, like, what's going to happen in the story. That I am excited for. Like, just to see, you know, just a bit of the context of what's been going on between season 4 and season 5. Like, where is Aku? Where has Jack been? And all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm absolutely excited to see what's going to be going on with this. So, yeah, if you guys are as excited as I am to see what's going to be going on with Season 5 of Samurai Jack, then all you have to do is just wait until March 11th for the big comeback of Samurai Jack. And so, finally, we now have Matt's Pick of the Week. And for this week, I decided I wanted to go and check out onto comics this time, considering that there is one that's going to be based on an animated property, a popular animated property even. Now, as you guys may know, DC is currently doing a big thing with Hanna-Barbera, where they're taking many of the popular shows from Hanna-Barbera and go turn them into comics. A lot of recent examples would include The Flintstones, with Scooby-Doo, with Wacky Races, and then there's another one called Future Quest, where they take a lot of the more serious Hanna-Barbera shows, like a lot of the more like sci-fi, supernatural, and superhero type of Hanna-Barbera shows and combine them all together into something called Future Quest, which would also include stuff like with Space Ghost, Johnny Quest, and many, many more. But now, it looks like Hanna-Barbera and DC has gotten another brand new comic that they want to turn one of their most beloved characters into. Just bring them into the DC comic. And I am, of course, talking about Snagglepuss. And what they want to do with Snagglepuss is actually very interesting. Reboot Snagglepuss in a way where now they want to make him a gay playwright from the late 1950s. So if I may go and into my source here on Cartoon Brew, the writer of this, Mark Russell, actually stated in an interview, it is obviously ignored in the cartoon. Hold on a sec. The quote here is mostly discussing about Snagglepuss's sexual orientation, because as you guys may know, or you've probably have heard, when talking about Snagglepuss and stuff like that, it's one of those characters that people always assume that he's probably gay, especially with his mannerisms. It is said here, it's obviously ignored in the cartoons because they were made at a time when you couldn't even acknowledge the existence of such a thing, but it's still so obvious. So it's natural to present it in a context where everybody knows, but it is still closeted. And dealing with the cultural scene of the 1950s, especially on Broadway, where everybody's gay or is working with someone who's gay, but nobody can talk about it, and what it's like to have to create a culture out of silence. And with that said, you can definitely tell, especially with the page preview that we've gotten, is that you could tell that they want to go a bit in a more serious route. Like, they really want to try to emphasize the message of homosexuality and how it is to deal with it, especially during a time when it is almost outlawed, per se. Like, being viewed as gay is considered, like, a really, really bad thing. Where, in contrast to today's age, where, like, even though people are still fighting for it, but they're definitely one step closer to be considered equally as human as heterosexuals. And it is definitely a fight that I absolutely go and support, especially when I know many of my friends and even family members are actually gay. So, yeah, LGBT rights are something that I definitely go and do support. And for any of you people who are listening and you are a member of the LGBT community, then welcome aboard, and I hope you really do enjoy the animation podcast. But anyways, going back into the Snagglepuss comic, I feel like it's definitely a great idea to really take this character and bring it to a whole new level with this message. And it can actually bring out something that could be a bit interesting. Like, you can have the same type of humor as the TV show, but, bring in something like a serious issue like this, and especially presenting it during, like I said before, a dark period when it is almost considered outlawed. So yeah, honestly, I could definitely get down into the story. But there is a major, major catch to the comic, believe it or not. And that is mostly the factor that everybody hates it. And I know, like, after what I said about, a nice, cool message about the, what it is to be gay during a time period when being gay is, like, shunned upon. Like, what is wrong with that? Okay, well, it's not necessarily the concept of it. It's not the writing of it. It's nothing like that. The concept is something that I'm sure that many, many people, the majority of people, can definitely get on board. The problem with the comic is that, holy Jesus, what the fridge is with the artwork? If you go look up DC Comics Snagglepuss artwork, like, oh my god. It's just weird. It's ugly as crap. It's just Weird and ugly. That's the best way to put it. Now, the thing is, though, with the DC Comics, the DC Hanna-Barbera comics, is that they definitely do try to go with a more realistic art style. And it definitely does have some mixed results. Sometimes it can work well, sometimes it doesn't. And that's mostly because of the factor that it is still Hanna-Barbera. It is the most famous simplistic style, and you're pretty much taking that and try to go hyper-realistic with it to the point where it's almost like you're entering upon Uncanny Valley. But with this, though, you're taking anthropomorphic animals and trying to make them look as realistic as possible. Like, oh my god, it's just... It looks uncomfortable to look at. Especially, like, they try to put in so much detail onto everything. It's almost as if I can imagine the whole scenario where an artist is trying to draw Snagglepuss and trying to put in as so much details as much as he can. And, like, Snagglepuss is just going to look at him and it's like, heavens to Betsy, you don't have to put in so much hair on me so that people can count how much hairs do I have on my left cheek. Or the details on my teeth, even. Just stop it. Put the pencil down. It's just, oh god, it's just ridiculous. And especially, it's just the way that they try to present it, it's more animal than it is like an actual person. Because like in the preview page that we got, it's not just Snagglepuss that's there, but you also got it's Snagglepuss talking to Augie Doggie. And yeah, the way that they're designed is just, it's just weird. And, like, you even see on, you see on Twitter, people are just making fun of it. But let me just go and start off with, there's this one Twitter user who actually did something actually pretty cool. Sorry about my Porky Pig style stuttering. The Twitter user is Kenny Day Skull, and he or she actually Kenny Day Skull mentioned, "Hey, not furry artists. The trick is to not make everything look super detailed." And the artist actually did a great job trying to recreate the image, but really simplify it so that we could see a lot more of the expressions on Snagglepuss. Like, you got a comparison to the ugly realistic thing, and then you got Candy Day Skull's artwork, which is a lot more simplistic. The details on the hair is pretty much removed, and we see more of the face and the expression that Snagglepuss is trying to say. And then there's another one, which is at Rabbit SK, at Rabbit Squirrel. Rabbit Squirrel. Okay, sorry about that. At Rabbit Squirrel Ninja also decided to parody this and try to make exaggerate the ugly art style to look like some ugly Sony Pictures animation style design, saying, "Lol, I hate the new Snagglepuss art so much, I implemented my productivity." And it actually, like, it's kind of a parody comic, just saying, like, "My boy, this is a very serious comic. The online critics are very excited to read it. We need to have as much details in our faces as possible so everybody can see how serious this comic is. We'll talk about gay stuff. Very serious. Maybe an Eisner even." And then you also got Augie Doggie on the side is just there, "But we are hideous. We are uncomfortable to look at." And yes, I guess this would be my Augie Doggie impression. Oh my god, it's just looking at these, just looking at the ways that people are just making fun of freaking Snagglepuss. And then there's also another one, Mick Thunder Goose. Oh my god, like, it just looks like a mix. It looks like if Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles decided to blend himself with a freaking tiger. And it's just like, and it's just a little thought bubble on the side just saying, "I just wanted to have a good time, and look at me now. Look at me, I am a monster, a tragedy even." Oh my god, it's just, It's gone to the point that the art style is just so laughably bad. I mean, my God, you got a great idea, but then the artwork just completely annihilates it. Oh my God. Oh, this is so bad. But honestly, I do hope that the writing can be good enough to go and do justice to not just its LGBT message, but also to Snagglepuss himself. Like, I'm hoping that they're going to do that well, but other than that, the artwork just doesn't show a lot of promise, and my God. You know, the worst thing is that I do hear that DC also wants to make more Hanna-Barbera comics, and who knows what could end up happening there. Like, we could also, like, oh God, if they're going to continue at this rate, imagine what they could do with stuff like either Top Cat or godforsaken Yogi Bear. Like, they want to, like, try to make a more realistic Yogi Bear that could even be much more of an abomination than what we got with the freaking 2010 movie, or what's it, 2011? I don't care. Like, with that dumb live action movie, like, holy crap. Like, this thing is gonna suck. Oh, good Lord. It's just, this artwork, I can't take it, I cannot take it seriously when it looks like freaking crap. Oh my God. Like, seriously, you don't have to go into, like, I appreciate that you want to put in details to your image, but you don't have to take it too far. I mean, seriously, like, there's a limit to what you can do. Like, my God. Okay. But anyways, you know what? For the sake of Snagglepuss, I think I'm going to end off by doing an impression of the guy to cap off my podcast right here. So, that is all that I've got for this week. So, thank you for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com, or just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast even. You can also find me on my Twitter at animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or another podcast service even, could you do us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would just be wonderful. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button on our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts on the news this week, or maybe just your thoughts in general even. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you for listening, and until next week, exit stage left.